voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
The news is sponsored by the Hunterdon Medical Center. Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's physician referral service at 1-800-511-4HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
USA Radio News with Jason Wirt.
Hillary Clinton is a throwback from yesterday. Our campaign is about creating a new American future.
Donald Trump slamming Hillary Clinton on the campaign trail, saying the policies of the Obama administration that she wants to continue will do nothing to grow quality jobs for the middle class in America. Meanwhile, thousands of more previously undisclosed documents from Hillary Clinton's tenure as Secretary of State will be released. The FBI says it uncovered the emails previously not disclosed by Clinton's attorneys during its year-long investigation of her use of a private server. The Justice Department said there's more than 15,000 new documents.
We're thankful that, you know, our neighbors are okay. But then we look here and we just wonder, you know, why my house?
That's Bonnie Ramsey speaking to KGO Television about losing her home in the California wildfires. USA Radio News.
Hi, it's Rusty Humphries. You know, we Americans, we're more health conscious than ever before. We're trying to increase the amount of exercise we get, reduce our weight, and to reduce our blood pressure. Now, if you're one of millions of Americans trying to reduce your blood pressure, there's a great new way to help you do it. It's called the Zona Plus, and it can help you lower your blood pressure using isometric therapy. Now, the science behind the Zona Plus, it was discovered while doing research with the Air Force, and you can check it all out at ZonaPlus.com. 22 clinical studies have shown that regular use can result in an average decrease of 10% or more in systolic and diastolic blood pressure. Plus, it's safe. It's completely drug-free and easy to use. Call 877-494-1616. Lower your blood pressure the safe and natural way. Zona Plus, 877-494-1616. Find out about our money-back guarantee, too. 877-494-1616, ZonaPlus.com.
The recovery in Louisiana now beginning. Here's Chris Barnes with more.
I'm so glad we're able to pull each other hand and help each other.
That woman among many who are flooded out in Louisiana. Louisiana's Governor John Bel Edwards asking for volunteers and donations to help the recovery of his state from those damaging floods.
It would be very helpful if people would donate to the Red Cross, to the Baton Rouge Area Foundation, and also to come in and volunteer to help people get back in their homes as quickly as possible.
Edwards telling CNN State of the Union because the flooding wasn't the result of a hurricane or a tropical storm that had a name. People around the U.S. are just now beginning to realize just how much damage took place. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
A 33-year-old man has died in an apparent drowning at a water park in Washington State. Officials at Wild Waves Theme Park said in a statement Sunday, lifeguards pulled the man out of one of the activity pools and tried CPR. The drowning comes after a 10-year-old boy was killed at a Kansas water park earlier this month. USA Radio News.
Geico presents Kathy, the candid real estate agent.
In the master bedroom, you'll see there's room for a king-size bed. And take a look at this walk-in closet. Now just imagine all these custom shelves and drawers turned upside down when a thief goes through them to take your entire vintage sneaker collection.
It's hard to know all that comes with buying a home or condo. That's why the Geico Insurance Agency makes getting covered for personal property loss and damage quick and easy. Call Geico today and see how much you could save on condo and homeowners insurance.
Donald Trump downplaying a report that several of his businesses are heavily in debt. Here's more on the story from correspondent Chris Barnes.
The smart people that read that story thought it was a good story. Some people didn't understand the story.
Donald Trump says a report in the New York Times claiming that his companies owe at least $650 million in debt is an overblown story.
But when you get to $300 million or $600 million, but you have massive buildings and big assets, that's a very small amount of money. I have very little debt.
Trump was speaking there on Fox and Friends. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
Youth and alcohol are never a good mix, and we've got a new candidate for the Darwin Awards. Here's the story.
Police say the guy and his friend were out drinking this weekend in San Diego to celebrate the guy's birthday. His friend was trying to leave, and the guy walked into the path of her BMW and laid down. The woman never stopped, and the guy died about 45 minutes later. Hospital officials say he suffered major trauma to his chest. Police know the identity of the BMW driver, but she has not been arrested. Jason Campadonia, San Diego.
Shamed Congresswoman Debbie Wasserman Schultz is joining the mayor of Miami Beach to urge Congress to approve more funding to battle Zika. Lawmakers are returning from their summer break, and Zika is the main focus of the Florida delegation, saying more Zika cases have been found in two neighborhoods of Miami-Dade County. More news and analysis online at westernjournalism.com. For USA Radio News, I'm Jason Wirt.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500 for more information about any of our programs or to join. NAMI Hunterdon, the voice for mental health in Hunterdon County.
Good afternoon. Let's find the weather here. Let's see. Tonight, it's going to be clear with a low around 53. Northwest winds 8 to 13 miles an hour, becoming light northwest after midnight. Tuesday is going to be sunny with a high near 82. Calm winds becoming west around 6 miles an hour in the afternoon. Tuesday night will be clear with a low around 56, light southwest winds. Wednesday sunny with a high near 86, calm winds becoming south 5 to 7 miles an hour in the afternoon. And Wednesday night will be mostly clear with a low around 61, south winds 3 to 5 miles an hour. And rather than read the rest, just say that according to this, it'll be mostly sunny the rest of the week. No downpours, which is good for a couple days. We still need the rain, but, you know, what can I say? This is the Hunterdon Medical Center's hour, compliments of the Hunterdon County Chamber of Commerce. I'm Larry Cartwright, your host, and we're very privileged to have with us today Jean Mealy.
Jamelli.
Okay, I'll get it right. That's one 0-for-1 now. And Jean is the Director of Parenting and Childbirth Education. Am I right?
That's right.
Okay. Mm-hmm. I always ask this. I don't know. It's just my own off-the-wall type thing.
Okay. Know?
But I ask how people got into this line of work because I've had people tell me, something such and such happened when I was a child, and I always wanted to be a doctor or a lawyer or whatever. Mm-hmm. And others have told me, which would have been more my case, oh, I had 3 kids and mortgage and car payments and real estate taxes, and I needed a job, and this came along. I've been doing it for 19 years.
Okay.
That's pretty much mine, was only I had 4 kids, a mortgage, and, you know. But thank you, Wonder Bread. So, so I'd like to ask you, Jean, how did you get involved in this?
In this area or nursing?
In nursing and this area. Okay. If you're not from this area.
Oh well, I'm a Jersey girl.
Okay.
I'm born and bred in Jersey. So
whereabouts?
Woodbridge.
Okay.
Woodbridge,
okay.
And then we moved to Millstone when I was 12. Mm-hmm. And I met my current husband in high school, and we were high school sweethearts.
So. Oh, yeah, we were, too.
Those teenage marriages never last, but this one did. So.
Yeah, this one did, too.
But
going to be 53 years.
Right. I've always wanted to be a nurse and went to nursing school right out of high school. and actually started out in medical surgical nursing and intensive care nursing.
Mm-hmm.
When my children were born, I started working part-time for a physician's office, and he would deliver babies, and I got fascinated by patient education and would sit with the women longer than the doctor would, teaching them things. And I said to him one day, I said, gee, I wish I could, you know, teach Lamaze to them instead of sending them up to the hospital. And he said, well, why can't you? And I said, well, because I'm scared to death to stand up in front of people, you know. But I found when you have a passion for it, you know, it all flows. So got intensely interested in education and became director many years ago of the program. And extended my education along the way, both academically and certification-wise, mm-hmm. Always in maternal child health. And that's pretty much how I ended up here. You know, still I have a staff of lactation consultants and childbirth educators. I also do perinatal education for the medical center nursing staff on maternity.
Okay.
So it's now all about education for me. As a side job, I also am an adjunct professor at Warren County Community College teaching.
Okay.
So clearly I love teaching. I love what I do. I love developing programs and everything, and it's very satisfying for me to do that. So,
you know, over the years I've given many presentations and mm-hmm. spoken to large audiences and stuff. And in the beginning I was like you
scared
know.
To death, yeah.
And someone told me, if you can't look at the people,
uh-huh.
look over them.
Right.
Pick something out, like an exit sign or something,
right.
over
right.
and just look over. So it looks like you're looking at them, but, you know,
right.
because you're up here and they're down there. And, you
yeah.
know, you
can, yeah.
And I did that, and it just seemed so, yeah, you know.
Uh-huh.
And after a couple times, I started lowering my sight down, and pretty soon I was looking at them and interacting with them and
right.
stuff, you know, and it got to be where it's no problem, you know,
right.
now it.
It's just, yeah, I think it's just repetition.
Experience,
you
know, and you do it, and, you know, yeah, you're going to.
Yeah, I think for me it matters to be prepared. You know,
oh, yeah,
you
definitely.
You want to be able to be prepared
sure.
and know what your content is and so forth. But and you're right, the audience really is important. I like mm-hmm. the feedback from the audience.
Sure. Sure.
Because then you can sort of work off their expressions and so forth.
Right.
But it's a lot of fun.
Yeah, and I would, I've gotten to the point after all these years that I just, if I need to, nine times out of ten, I don't bring any notes. I know what I want to say, and I just,
right.
you know, I've said it so many times, I just try to use it at different versions, you
right.
know. But if I feel like I'm going to be iffy about it,
yeah,
I'll write little notes, one
right.
or two word notes on a card.
Yes.
You know,
yes.
Not the whole sentence or anything, just, you know, like depression.
Yeah.
You know, or
just a prompt.
You know, bipolar or something, you know.
Right.
And just use that as a prompt, right.
Right.
You know.
Right. Yeah. I don't do well with reading speeches.
I don't either.
Distracted
you know?
From that. But a few key words on something, or if I'm
right.
doing a slide presentation,
right.
that's sort of my cheat sheet.
Sure.
You know,
yeah.
and it works. So.
And
it,
I think that it's better because then it's more interactive with the audience, you know, like
right.
they see that you're not checking
fumbling.
Out the, you know,
mm-hmm. yeah.
staring down at the piece of paper you got in front of you,
right.
you know, but you're looking at them and looking around and, you know.
Right, right.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's kind of cool.
Yeah.
Okay. Your role at the medical center involves a large area, if I'm not mistaken.
Well, yes and no. I actually have a dual position in which I'm in charge of the childbirth education department, which includes the lactation consultants there. And then a separate position is the perinatal education part of it, which is educating the nurses on the things that they need to know as maternity nurses, the latest updated information on how to handle obstetrical emergencies and so forth. So they're two separate jobs. So it's sort of a hybrid job.
Okay.
It's, you know, it's in other areas, they're actually two separate jobs, but I'm blessed with doing both of them. So I get to see I get to see how the nurses, you know, need their education. And I also
yeah.
have the outpatient thing. But along with that, I've been working at the medical center is really a blessing because it's one of those places that you can, if you have an idea, you just you go with it. You know, you mm-hmm. ask, you get clearance for it, and they're like, well, what's the harm? Give it a try. So
yeah,
there have been classes
yeah.
I've tried over the years, and some have taken and some have failed. But when I first started, all we had was Lamaze and Refresher Lamaze and Sibling, and then I've grown it to include hypnobirthing and mother support groups and breastfeeding
classes. You're going to have to explain all that to me, okay? So,
but there's, you know, there's a lot of other offerings that I've been able to
right.
develop over the years so that we're serving a population not only prenatally but after they go home as
mm-hmm.
well. So they know that they can call
right.
and
right.
and we'll be there for them after
okay.
they go home from the hospital.
Right.
So
now, when you say you instruct the maternity nurses,
mm-hmm.
How, I mean, all right, you're instructing them, but they've been probably doing the job a long time too.
Right.
And I find that, maybe not in all cases, but I find that in a lot of cases, people who have done a job and done it for a while,
mm-hmm.
I don't want to say fall in a rut, but
they tend to do it the same.
They tend to yeah. do the same thing over and over again.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that they just tend to do the same
right.
thing. Do you find that that's true? And when you're presenting them with something, say, new or different,
mm-hmm.
that it's a little hard for them to swallow? For lack of better words?
Well, you get a comfort level with your job. And what we were taught in school, any of us, is now different because of evidence. It's called evidence-based
mm-hmm.
practice.
Right.
Where before we used to practice according to tradition, it seemed to work, therefore we did it. Now we practice according to very rigorous research. So there have been practice changes over the years, and some of them are met with resistance for sure. You know, for instance, umbilical cord care with babies. We used to do alcohol around it, and now we do nothing. And it seems sort of counterintuitive. Why wouldn't you do alcohol? But what alcohol does is it kills the good bacteria, which are helping the cord to separate. So it actually delays the cord separating. And that was based on evidence. We've been doing that for quite some time now.
Right, right.
You know, there's other issues that are bigger that require a lot more practice change. And it's uncomfortable having new practice because what you're doing you think is working. Seems to be working, but evidence shows.
And you may like doing it that way.
You may like doing it that way.
Yeah.
But it's not only new practice that we introduce, it's also educating them for things that, emergencies that don't happen very often, that they need to be ready for. You know, for instance, a postpartum hemorrhage, which doesn't happen often, thank goodness, but you have to be ready
right.
immediately. So we have drills that we provide the education and sort of allow them to use a mannequin and practice. What would you do with this piece of equipment? Do you know how to use this piece of equipment? Do you know how to use this cart that has all the emergency equipment? Where is this stuff so you can put your hands on it very quickly?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's not only new practice, it's also drilling for the things that you wish wouldn't happen but still do.
That may happen,
you know?
Yeah.
Right,
yeah. Right,
right. And then there's little things. Like today we had a live webinar on multiple gestation, multiple pregnancy. And, you know, the nursing staff that was on duty all sat in on the webinar. So that's something informal that we
right.
do as it
right.
comes across my desk. I give those offerings to them. So it's got a lot of components to it. You know,
when you're saying multiple...
twins and
oh, that's
yeah.
what I thought, but okay, yeah,
yeah, multiple gestation,
right.
yeah,
and that's not as predominant, is it, as single birth?
Not naturally, no,
no, right.
But with fertility treatments and mm-hmm. with our older population of mothers, you know, a lot of times they need assistance getting pregnant, so the result is often multiple gestations.
Right, right.
So
yeah.
It happens naturally as well.
Yeah, yeah. No, that's true, but,
yeah.
you know, a couple finds out they're pregnant, or she's pregnant,
uh-huh.
you know. What do you, you know, what is the first, what should they do? What, you
the
know.
First thing?
You know, back, now I'm, my oldest is 46, 47.
Uh-huh.
So 40 some odd years ago. It was like, you know, you had the baby and that was, you know.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? It's not like pre-birth
planning, right?
Planning and what
right.
you've done. I mean, it was like, you know, you had the baby and now, okay, here it is. You know, have a nice day. You know?
Right, right.
So it's like now it's totally different.
Yeah. Well, and it's all based on evidence.
Mm-hmm.
What we found out about infant mortality and maternal mortality,
right.
You know, what grows healthy babies versus what doesn't. So now we recommend that a couple try to plan their pregnancy. Although even in this age, 2016, half of all pregnancies are unplanned still, which is sort of amazing to me that
yeah.
they are. But for the half that are planned, you really want to spend 3 months prior planning for that pregnancy, taking your prenatal vitamin with folic acid and iron, going to the physician and getting a preconception exam, which includes blood work, making sure that she's immune to the diseases she ought to be immune to,
right.
That she doesn't have any issues that need treatment, a review of any medications she's taking. Can these be taken while she's pregnant, or do they need to be switched off mm-hmm. to another medication?
Mm-hmm.
And all this enhances the health of the pregnancy and the baby. So what I tell people is if you plan this, you actually have less to worry about when you do get pregnant. So, you know, say somebody does get pregnant and they went out, you know, a couple of Friday nights and they
right.
had a couple of drinks. They will spend the entire pregnancy worrying about that alcohol. You know, is it doing any harm? I don't know. Fetal alcohol syndrome happens with very low levels of alcohol intake, and it doesn't happen with very high levels sometimes.
Right.
So there's no safe minimal level. But she'll spend the whole pregnancy worrying about that, where if she had planned it, then she's got less to worry about. She knows I'm immune to rubella. I haven't been drinking. I did change that medication. I'm not
mm-hmm.
taking that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking something safer for
right.
pregnancy.
Right.
So hopefully, you know, they've done a little bit of planning and they're taking care of, you know, she's taking care of herself
right.
as if she was pregnant, you know. And it doesn't minimize her partner either. You know, the way his health also, you know, influences the health of the baby as well. So he should be taking good care of himself. So.
They never even asked me anything.
I know. But it matters. You know, it really does matter. You know, if he's on certain medications, you know, if he's a drug user, a marijuana user, it really can affect the sperm count.
Oh, sure.
Sperm motility
sure.
and, you know, and whether he can fertilize an egg. So it really does. There's a lot that plays into it that we know. However, babies have been born for eons, you know, and I always tell people, don't get wrapped up into, oh, my goodness, I breathed some chemicals or I did this. I think that the human organism is amazingly resilient.
Mm-hmm.
And
absolutely.
And the miracle of this whole thing is that usually babies are born healthy. But do the obvious. You know, don't do everything in moderation and don't get so worried that
right.
everything can, you know, can negatively impact a pregnancy.
Right.
You know, women have babies every single day and they do all the wrong things and those babies are born perfectly well. You don't want to take those chances if you can help it.
Right. The percentage that they,
right.
you know, may be born with defects is, you know.
Right. Most babies are born healthy.
Healthy.
Right. Right. So, you know, you don't want to negatively influence your pregnancy by worrying about every little thing. You know.
Because don't you feel that if they worry about all this and doesn't that have some effect on
them? Absolutely.
You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, I would think it would, and I'm no,
yeah.
you know, not even close to being a doctor.
Right.
So, you know, I would yeah. think it would have some kind of effect on
well,
them.
Stress
know.
Has a negative effect
sure.
on all of our body
sure.
systems.
Right.
So you don't want her to get so absorbed in, I shouldn't do this, I shouldn't do that, and so forth. And likewise with taking classes, you know, I mean, yeah, women have been birthing for centuries, but we've sort of gotten away from the naturalist, the naturalistic way of it. Sort of made birth a horrendous experience in the media. Women don't see babies being born as they did with extended families years ago. You know, birth was just sort of, oh, well, you know, Aunt Sally's having her baby in the bedroom.
Yeah.
And people went and witnessed it and birth just happened. You know, now we've sort of gotten away from all of that. And frequently people come to class and they haven't held a baby. They haven't changed a diaper. You know, in years past, that never happened. You know, you were part of the family and you always did that. But now we don't have an extended family in the United States
right.
many times. So, you know, the classes, I think, are essential for those people who are fearful of birth, who don't have any experience with baby care, and they really do help you to influence your birth positively.
And what sort of classes are we talking about?
Well, for childbirth education, for teaching about the birth experience, we have Lamaze classes, and then we have hypnobirth classes.
Okay, explain.
The Lamaze classes teach relaxation and comfort options for labor, including medications and anesthesia. They tell you all about reasonably what to expect with a birth, mm-hmm. rather than watching the media, which portrays birth very negatively and horrendously, I think. And Lamaze is taken by people who maybe don't want to use medications and others who really do want to use medications. Hypnobirth uses hypnosis as its primary form of relaxation. So it's a little bit of a deeper form of relaxation, and it helps very easily to get your mind out of the way and let your body do its work, because your body knows how to be present.
And you do this in the medical center?
We do. Mm-hmm. Oh. Yep, we've been doing hypnobirthing for 13 years now.
Wow.
Maybe 14 years. But, you know, both methods are effective. The important thing is that the couple take this seriously. They can't just sit in class and hope that it works. They do need to invest time and practice and thinking about it and thinking about what their vision for birth is.
Now, the father is involved in this?
Absolutely, every step of the way. You know?
Gee, that's changed.
Yeah, every step of the way. So I always tell people there's nothing magic about the method that you choose. The magic is within the couple to make that work. To really take it seriously. So many people go to Lamaze class and then they tell their friends, well, it didn't work. Well, if you didn't practice, it's not going to work.
And how would they practice? I mean, is it the breathing and
exercises?
Yeah,
relaxation and everything.
Okay.
It's like a conditioned response. You pick up the phone and you say hello. If you don't practice what you've learned in class, it all sort of goes out the window when a contraction comes.
That's pretty much with anything, though, isn't
it?
True.
You need to practice.
So the
impulse when you have a contraction is to sort of tense up your body. What we're trying to do is say, no, do this instead.
Mm-hmm.
Relax and breathe instead. What that does is it has the potential to make the labor more comfortable and shorter, because she won't be as fearful, so she won't be getting in the way of her labor.
Okay.
So in some things that happen during labor are completely out of the mother's control. How she approaches labor emotionally and physically is totally within her control. And the fitter she is, the more healthy she is, the more educated she is, the more she's going to have an easier labor of it,
mm-hmm.
potentially. I mean, we can't control for everything.
No, of course not.
But, she's not an innocent bystander in this. If she approaches labor with fear, she's going to slow her labor down.
Now, these are all like the mother would be home and pains would come and mm-hmm. water would break and then she'd be on her way to the hospital to have the child. Is mm-hmm. that correct? I mean, pretty much, in a broad sense.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I know we lived in the Shannock Station
uh-huh.
on top of the mountain there.
Okay.
And the doctor wanted my wife to come in because he was afraid she wouldn't make it if she waited till the end and they induced the labor.
Okay.
Do you guys still induce labor?
Sure. Yeah.
For certain.
There's what's called elective induction. That would have been an elective induction. There's really no medical reason for it. If she had fast labors, that certainly is a reasonable assumption that maybe the next labor is going to be fast, although that's still an elective induction. Medical reasons might be if she's got hypertensive disease, if she's got gestational diabetes, which is diabetes during pregnancy, if she's a diabetic to begin with.
My wife had none of these, but we just lived far away, and the doctor felt that.
How far away did you live?
From the Somerset Medical Center, about
25 minutes?
Yeah, it was a little more than that.
Did she have short labors?
Pretty much.
Oh, okay.
To some degree.
Yeah, then that might have been the reasoning behind
it. Yeah, I just,
Yeah. The thing
it's kind of interesting, you know. Like, you
well, we still, there's still reasons to induce. If mom goes overdue, you know, she we need to get the baby out because
right.
the placentas only live so long. If her water breaks and she doesn't go into labor, then we need to induce the labor. But induction is not like turning on a light switch. You know, we just can't start the contractions and get her on her way.
Right.
Sometimes it takes several days to get her ready to get into labor. And all of that can make for an exhausting time. It increases her risk of a cesarean birth if we induce labor. So nice to have labor start on its own, but there's circumstances where you do need to get it started.
Now, do you allow the father in with the birth?
Sure. Different from you, huh?
No, actually, I'll tell you that. I think they would probably, in the early stages of that.
Probably, yeah.
And the nurses, there was two nurses, and they said, you're going in and see your wife, right? I says, no, I'll wait out here.
Uh-huh.
And they says, oh, no, you're not. And they grabbed me, and they started throwing these, you know, gowns and stuff, and you have to put this on your feet. And they and wow. I'm going, well, you got to be kidding me. No, and they're dragging me in. No, you will go, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was, like, interesting.
Yeah. But, see, the classes not only help the mother, but they would have trained you to know what birth is like and how you can help her. So you don't feel quite so nervous about it either because you know what this looks like and you know what you can
do. Well, I will tell you, the first time, my wife's bed was here and I was, like, to her the right of it, you know, in a chair. And I would look across and there was two tanks there.
Mm-hmm.
And I was reading the labels on the tanks because I couldn't. No way I wanted to be there, you know.
Right, yeah.
And I'm reading the labels, and I'm reading a fine little print on it, you know, because I was, you know.
Yeah, so it's frightening. But, you know, if you go to class, then you know what you should do.
Right.
And, you know, partners really play an important role in their partner's birth because – if you put a woman in the room by herself, she tends to labor longer with more pain.
Right,
but if you put her in a room with a caring partner, even if that partner fumbles, then she labors better.
Right.
So
right.
which tells you that labor is not only a physical event, it is an emotional and mental event as well.
Oh, I'm sure it is.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I've said many times that if men were the ones giving birth, we wouldn't have a population.
That's
you
right.
know, there would be no population, you know. Wouldn't have to worry about overpopulated areas because there wouldn't be any.
Right.
You know? Well, because I give women a lot of credit for that.
Yeah.
I really do.
But, you know, it's a natural experience. And, you know, your body
yeah,
knows
we
how to
say
function.
It is. But
it is, you know. But we overthink it. As human beings, we tend to overthink it. But if you can stay relaxed and let the body do what it needs, it knows how to do, then it goes a lot better. I mean, you are getting a large object out of a small space, obviously.
Right.
But if you can relax, it goes better for
you.
Okay. So.
Now, when you were talking about the hypnotism.
The hypnobirth classes? Uh-huh.
Hypnobirth, is it?
Yeah.
Okay. I assume that's similar or not similar, but I mean, it's classes for the mother and the father. And just reiterate, why would we use hypnosis for this rather than all the other stuff we have?
It's a deeper form of relaxation.
Okay.
Hypnosis has been around for millions of years. If you get somebody into a deep enough trance, you can do major surgery using hypnosis. So what we do, hypnosis is just a form of focused concentration where we get her into a relaxed state and give her positive suggestions that her brain accepts.
Okay.
It's highly effective in quitting smoking and losing weight if the client is motivated to do so. What it does is it gives them, you know, the power to sort of get over quitting smoking or losing weight. So what we do is while she's in that nice hypnotic trance, she's awake and aware. She knows exactly what she's doing. She's choosing to be there. We give her positive suggestions. So it's similar. I always ask people, have you ever used hypnosis? And some have, and most people haven't used it. The fact is, we move into hypnotic trances all day long. If you ever zoned out, if you've ever daydreamed, if you've ever driven home and wondered, how in the heck did I get here?
Yeah.
You have been in a hypnotic trance.
Right.
So it's a human ability to be able to do that. Now, if you were in highway hypnosis driving down the road and a deer ran out in front of you, as they do in Hunterdon County, four of them ran out in front of me this morning, you would slam on the brake because now your attention is brought to the present rather than daydreaming. So what we do is we take that ability and we use it for good. So she's totally awake and aware. She's not unconscious. She's totally awake and aware. She just chooses to put her attention somewhere else.
And does she still feel, I'm assuming there's some degree of pain with the childbirth?
Well, if what we practice in class is she chooses how she's going to feel it, as pressure, as warmth, whatever. And so the pain is diminished a little bit because she's in such a relaxed state.
Okay.
So the muscles can work the way they need to work. Not that there aren't intense moments, because there certainly are.
Right.
But it sort of blunts it a little bit.
Okay.
And because she's so relaxed, the labor can move along more quickly because she's not getting in the way.
What is the average length of labor time?
It's,
you know, I mean, it's
first
everybody's
time,
different, I guess, but
are,
you know.
Yeah, but there is an average. It's about 14 to 16 hours for a first baby. I know, it's a long time.
That's what I said.
It's a long time.
Men
yeah.
would, there'd yeah. be no population if the men were doing this.
But we do know. It one contraction at a time, so we do it like a minute at a time.
No, I understand, yeah. but it's still, but
it's, you know. It's challenging.
Yeah. I don't know that I'd want to be awake, I think. Put me to sleep and
yeah.
do it, you know.
Yeah, if we could do that, but we can't.
Yeah, unfortunately, that. Yeah. yeah. Mm-hmm. If... You had mentioned before, now we know what hypnobirthing is. Lamaze.
Mm-hmm.
Did I say that right?
Yep.
Lamaze?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. What does that entail?
Well, it's we teach all about comfort techniques she can use in both classes, both Lamaze and hypnobirth. So it could be music, aromatherapy, movement, water therapy, slow dancing, sitting on a birthing ball, getting into the shower, all kinds of comfort techniques. And then the hallmarks of our Lamaze are the relaxation, breathing patterns, which are mm-hmm. helpful for some people. And we also use particular kinds of massage, which help to block painful impulses. So that's what's involved in Lamaze.
And when do you normally start these classes? I'm assuming prior to the birth.
You do, yeah.
But how soon? 6 weeks, 8 weeks, what
yeah,
is it?
Yeah, we want to do them in the last trimester because it's characteristic of women as they go through the 9 months of pregnancy. It's not only a physical event, it is an emotional event for both the woman and her partner. And in the first 6 months of the pregnancy, she's really focused on building the baby within. She's very much inwardly focused on this. In the last 3 months, psychologically, she turns to, okay, how do I get this baby out? So we get her just when her interest is highest at learning about how to get through labor. So we don't want her to take it weeks and weeks and weeks before. We want to finish it up by about 2 to 3 weeks before her due date.
Okay.
So it's very fresh in their minds.
Okay. What are some of the things that people don't always think of doing prior to birth, or is there?
You mean,
you know, like
education-wise, or
there's things that they don't always think of, but mm-hmm. they should know.
Mm-hmm.
And these classes, I assume, teach them that.
Yeah. Well, the baby care class talks all about infant care, infant care is fairly easy once you do it a few times. You change the diaper, as long as you get it in the right spot, nothing comes out of it. You've done it right. It's not that difficult. But our classes also teach about infant temperament and personality and infant cues, which are body language that the baby lets you know what he or she needs. So we focus a lot on that as well. And we talk about the realities of parenting, but you know, any parent will tell you there's no preparation for it, you know.
What do you mean by the realities of parenting?
Well, it's 24/7. The baby's always there, and they're very needy in the first, you know, 4 or 5 months or so. They need to eat frequently. There is no sleeping through the night. That's a myth. The baby's tummy is about the size of a walnut after about 10 or 15 days, and it can't hold anything that will last any more than a couple of hours or so. And it's a new reality. Babies take a lot of time, and people don't realize that. Babies are small. They sleep a lot.
Right.
So if you've never had a baby home, you don't know what time it takes, you know, until you get to the reality of it. And that's huge. You know, so she's not going to be able to clean her whole house and get ready for company. I tell them if they can maybe, you know, get their teeth brushed in a shower, you've done your work for the day, you know, and taking care of the baby.
You know, if they don't like the way the house looks,
yeah.
so what?
You try to prepare them for that.
Okay.
I don't know that anything really can prepare them because I don't think there's an experience like being a parent in this world, really.
No.
You know, I think parenting teaches lessons that you will never learn in any other venue. It just can't, you know.
Now, when I volunteer at the hospital, I see a lot of times either the day that the mother's being discharged mm-hmm. or day before or whatever,
mm-hmm.
And there'll be car seats.
Yes.
Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, they'll be instructed on how to put them in, where to use them, how to use them, et cetera.
Right.
You want to elaborate a little bit on that?
Well, we started that at the medical center 16 years ago.
Whoa,
our car seat program. It's been 2000. I went to the class in 2000.
Wow.
So I think we were the first hospital in the state to have that program. And along the way, we've had trained technicians. I'm the only one now.
I know.
I
see you all the time going by.
Yeah.
And, you know, I remember you said, I'll see you in a couple of weeks. You know, you're still doing a radio show?
Yeah, that's right. So it's a voluntary program. The state mandates that the nursing staff make sure that couples have a car seat. The state doesn't intrude into whether it's installed correctly or not. So they don't have to have it checked. It's totally voluntary. About 85% to 90% of people get the car seat wrong. They install it incorrectly
or use it
incorrectly. It's not hard to do, but I always tell the dad it's like me changing oil. I have a rough idea that it's somewhere under the hood, and they're like, well, that's easy. Well, yeah, because you do it. You know, if you don't do a car seat every day, you don't know how. I don't know how to change oil. I've got I'm blessed with a husband who does that for me. So,
I got a garage that I take it to. You know.
So I show them how to do it and how to do it correctly. And then the other piece of that is so what you see downstairs on the first floor is I go out with the dad and I show him how to install the base, and then we bring the top carrier upstairs, and in the room I'll show them how to put the baby in the car seat.
Okay.
So that the baby's safe.
Yeah.
We can reduce injuries in babies over 70%.
Wow.
Just by using a car seat correctly. If you don't use it correctly, you start cutting into that margin of 71%.
You know, it's amazing because when you stop and think, like 40-plus years back.
We didn't have them.
You didn't have any of that.
Right,
You know, but I mean, Mama used to hold the baby in her arms while she rode in the car,
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. But here's the thing about that, too, because oftentimes I'll have a grandfather say, well, we didn't use those and our kids were okay. Now, if you think back to when we were children, we had three TV stations. Okay, Walter Cronkite did not talk about the number of children who were killed in cars, who got crushed in between their parents and the dashboard, or who flew out of the car because they weren't restrained. Right. Children died. Otherwise, we wouldn't have car seats. If children didn't die, we'd still be sitting in the back seat. So children did die. You just didn't hear about it, you know, as much as you do now, because we have so many more news outlets.
Right.
You know, then we had three three news stations. You know, when we had four, six, and 10.
Depending where you were, you may only had two.
You may only had two. And he didn't talk about local news. No. He didn't talk about stuff like that. No. He talked about world news.
Sure.
So children did die, and a lot less are dying now because of that. And we've learned a lot. In 16 years, car seats have come a tremendous way.
Oh, yeah.
And they're both easier to use and much more complex to use and install.
Yeah. It's just interesting, you know, how far things have come over the last, you know, even 10, 15 years.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
Forget going back as far as,
Yes, we are.
Yeah. you want to tell us about the maternity and newborn care centers at the hospital?
Sure. There's 19 rooms now. One room is turned over to a lactation consultant room. All the rooms are identical. They're all private rooms. We have adopted what's called an LDR concept, which is labor delivery recovery. It's a large unit. So what we've done is we've taken all of the labor rooms and just designated this one hallway as the labor hallway.
Okay.
And then after the baby is born, a couple of hours afterwards, mom and dad and baby are in that one room, and then they either walk over or get wheeled over across the hall, identical room, but it's where they stay for postpartum. Much better for nursing communication, much safer care, because all of the labor people are all in one area, so the labor nurses are all in one area.
Okay.
But every room is private. With the exception of the triage area, which is a semi-private room.
That's changed, too.
It has, yeah, yeah. Well, the unit is,
you know,
was completely new.
Well, yeah, I understand ago, that, but, yeah. You know, but I'm thinking even going back a couple of years, there wasn't individual rooms.
No, they were semi-private rooms. Yeah. But a lot of the hospital, now that we've got 5 West, which is the cardiac care unit, which is beautiful, all of those are private rooms. Then we've been able to take 3 West, which is used to be the old CCF, the old continued care facility years ago, and convert some of those rooms to private rooms. Because now, if you built a hospital now, it would be all private rooms.
Right.
It's sort of weird to have semi-private rooms.
Right.
So we've been able to make those rooms into private rooms, which is very nice.
Yeah, I know when I was... I was on vacation last year and didn't have the vacation because I wound up in a hospital for 10 days in Maryland.
No.
It was, every year we go down to Chincoteague, Virginia.
Okay.
And we go camping. And my granddaughter and her best friend and, you know, my son and his wife, and they all tent camp. Like I said, I don't sleep on the ground, so I get into a pop-up. But, when we went down last year, I wound up with a severe infection and wound up in a hospital for 10 days. And I noticed that when the ward I was in, the floor I was on in Maryland, in a hospital in Maryland, was the closest hospital, narrow way. But everyone was a private room, and they were large. They were big rooms.
Yeah.
It wasn't like they were, and they each had their own private bath and shower and everything in there, And it was like, whoa,
Yeah, about that, right?
And then I came home, and in middle of September, I wound up with a severe urinary tract infection and wound up on a Fifth Florida Medical Center 10 days. Because I have AFib, and they had to wean me off the warfarin.
Oh, okay.
Before they could do any, tests, so they didn't want me bleeding out all over the place.
Yeah, that's.
And then before they let me go, they had to build
put
it back
on.
Up.
Yeah, right.
So that was another 10 days. But I was in a private room there, too.
Yeah.
Up on the fifth floor.
Right.
It's
very nice.
It has come a long way,
mm-hmm.
because, years back, I don't care what hospital you were in, you weren't in a private room.
Right.
Unless you owned the hospital or something.
Yeah, then you would get a private room.
Right.
Yeah.
But other than that, it wasn't happening.
Things have changed.
Yeah. It sure has.
Which is good,
And it is good. Mm-hmm. Now you offer supportive, what do you want to call it, programs?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. After the child is born, after birth?
Right. Yeah, we have.
You want to elaborate a little bit on
those?
We
have a weekly support group for babies 0 to 6 months. It's called Baby Steps 1. And that meets every Thursday at 1. And then once the baby's 6 months old, go ahead.
Go ahead. No, I was just going to ask, 0 to 6 months, now that's the child is born.
Uh-huh.
So mom comes with the child.
Yep.
And, you know, what, once a week?
Once a week, right.
Okay.
So it's every Thursday. And then from 6 to 12 months, it goes to twice a month. And then age 1 to 3, it's twice a month also. Because those needs are not quite as urgent. They've sort of got the parenting thing down, and they don't quite need.
At least you hope they did anyway.
Yeah. Although they do call me and email me, which is lovely, you know. So the Baby Steps groups are, it's a nice place to get affirmation from other mothers that you're on the right track. And occasionally I'll have dads come, but it's not often, but we certainly welcome them.
Right.
But it's during the day.
Yeah, so
it's the one place where they can sort of try out, how does it feel when my baby cries in public, and how do I breastfeed my baby in public without revealing everything, because half the class is breastfeeding at any given time. How many diapers do I need to bring for an hour and a half, you know? So it's sort of a very non-judgmental, it's okay to be here, you know, it's okay if the baby cries, it's okay if you have to feed, it's okay if you fumble. There is no dumb question. There's weird ones, but there's no dumb ones, I tell people. So our common themes are feeding, sleeping.
Mm-hmm.
We talk about developmental milestones. We talk about, you know, stimulating the babies to learn. Any little questions that they have.
How do you stimulate the baby to learn?
Well,
just out of curiosity.
You stimulate the senses.
Oh, okay.
First, you know,
okay.
And then at play. You're playing with the baby. We talk about how to read the baby's cues, how to read that, those, you know, facial expressions.
Right.
I bring a scale every week. So, you know, they get to weigh the baby if they want to do that. And it's, you know, at the doctor's office, they don't get a lot of time. So
this
is an hour and a half
long.
So they have the time. You know, I can give them the time and we can sort of dissect what's going on at night. Why isn't your baby sleeping through the night? And here's how you can help the baby to sleep through the night. And then the most rewarding thing is they develop their own support groups. They all have, you know, there's Facebook pages out there that are comprised of Baby Steps moms. They have play groups that they meet. They have stroller walks that they do all on their own. And they wouldn't have met had it not been for Baby Steps. So they've formed their own village.
Sure.
Which is fantastic.
Right.
You know.
And it's their own support.
It's their own support. Exactly right.
You know.
So, yeah.
You know, it's like I'm highly involved with NAMI,
mm-hmm.
the National Alliance on Mental Illness, and we have support groups for families.
Right.
And, you know, it's you see families come and they're in crisis, and and other people, all the people that are there are either been there and done that or are going through the same thing or, you know, and can lend support or throw out ideas that may have worked for them and that the other person hasn't tried. And, you know, not necessarily that's always going to work, but, you know, you won't know unless you give it a shot.
Right. You know? And so, it really helps to know that other people are in this.
That you're not doing this alone.
Yeah. You know? And I think oftentimes I could really not say anything at all in the in the group because they're supportive to one another.
Right.
They toss out their own suggestions. It's so nice for a new mom to see that after about 3 or 4 months, things have straightened out and the mothers are more confident. It's very rewarding from my point of view to see a scared and nervous new mom find her feet and really develop into a confident mom.
Sure.
So those moms I hear from, I just heard from a mom this morning, 9 years ago I met her. 9 years ago. and actually I've been doing the groups for over 20 years.
Right.
So
it's
very rewarding to talk to them 1, 2, 3 years down the line. And they're not really calling to ask me anything. They're calling like, I have this problem. Here's what I'm going to do. What do you think? So they found their way. You know, they've learned how to be parents.
Right.
It takes time to be a parent. It really, you know, you become a parent in an instant, but it takes time
and
to become a
parent. And as you well know, it doesn't matter how old the child is or how old of an adult they become or have their own family or whatever.
Right.
You're still their parent.
That's exactly right.
You know,
and
you will always be their parent.
You still worry about them,
And you still worry about them and I have to bite my tongue.
Yeah, as grandparents we do.
You know, and, you know,
Yep.
But even with my kids, I sometimes bite my tongue because I feel they're adults and, you know,
they
will ask if they want to know. They not necessarily want my opinion because,
you know. Yep.
So I don't say it, but then I go inside the other room and
I know.
They're their own people. They're their own people, you know.
But you know what the reward is? We just had a new grandson 3 weeks ago, and we've got a five-year-old grandson. And what I've discovered as a grandmother is that, or as any grandparent, is that you have to it's not your child.
That's right. You have to
step back, and you have to have the faith that you raised your children well enough to be parents, and that's a reward.
Yeah.
That you know you see them doing it on their own two feet, and they're doing well, and it's not your place to be the parent.
Nope,
it's your place to support and answer questions.
Yeah, exactly.
But, you want to step back.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And that's hard.
Oh yeah.
Because we know how to do it.
Yeah. I have three granddaughters, and my youngest was just turned 21.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
On the 17th, of August. So the oldest is 27, and I got one 24.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I'm only 30, so that, you know.
Me too.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, it was kind of tough being married 52 years and only 30, but,
we're managing.
One of those. Yeah, I'm getting through it, you know. Yeah. My wife is not so good at it, but I'm getting through it. Is there other programs you want to talk about in the last couple minutes that we have that we didn't touch on that you'd like to?
I think maybe to highlight our lactation program.
Okay.
We have lactation consultants. I have four of them. They're board-certified lactation consultants, and they are wonderfully dedicated. They're all just fantastic at what they do. And this is part of the continuum of care, is that people will have prenatal breastfeeding classes, and then we support them while in the hospital. And then we have outpatient visits or outpatient phone calls.
Mm-hmm.
So we support them throughout. Even if they didn't deliver with us, they're supported.
Right.
They can come and have consults. The nice thing about Obamacare is that there's free lactation visits. We just bill the insurance, so they don't need to bring any bills or anything like that. And that's not to diminish my childbirth educators who are separate, who are a wonderfully passionate group of people as well. I don't hire people unless they're passionate about what they do.
Well, it helps.
That's right. It really does. Yeah.
It does, I find that from an outsider's point of view that, thousands and thousands of years ago, women were giving birth and breastfeeding.
Mm-hmm.
And then they, in current age, they stopped more got with, the little bottles and all that
formulas,
formulas and stuff. And now it seems like the trend is to go back to it.
Yeah.
I mean, whether it's because of what's going on in the hospitals that they want them to go back to it or whatever, I don't know. But it just seems like it's more prevalent now in this day and age than it was, say, 10, 15 years ago or whatever.
Yeah, actually, it's the 20th century was when early in the 20th century, commercial formula became available. And this was when we were very science-based, and the reason it's called formula is because it's scientifically formulated. It was a marketing ploy, and in the 50s and 40s, consumers bought it. Well, if it's scientific, therefore it must be better.
Right.
For me, it's sort of like, is the uterus a good place for a baby to grow? Mm. We wouldn't think of anything different. Breast milk is superior in many ways to formula. And we know much more about it. Right. We know much more about breastfeeding and breast milk than we did years ago.
Right.
So babies are healthier.
Right.
They're less sick on breast milk. So we want them to breastfeed if it's at all possible.
In the last, 30 seconds or so, if someone wanted to reach out to you about the programs, how would they do that?
They just call 908-788-MOMS.
788-MOMS.
That's it.
Well, that's easy.
Yep,
I could even remember that.
That's my line.
908-788-MOMS.
Right.
All right, folks, if you want any more information, you can call Gene at that number.
Great.
All right. Gene, I really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you. I always enjoy it.
It's been very knowledgeable. You know, it's been very rewarding, you know, to learn things, you know. And I hope you continue, and I will see you on Friday.
Okay, that's right. As I'm walking in and out.
As you're walking in and out with the car seat, I'll see you then.
Okay, great.
You've been listening to the Hunter Medical Center's Hour. We'll be back again next week, and have a healthy week.
Did you know that 1 in 5 people are affected by mental illness? NAMI Hunterdon is the locally affiliate for NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness. We are all volunteers, and all our programs are free of charge. We offer Family to Family, a 12-week course for families that have an adult member with a mental illness. Another popular program is In Our Own Voice, where individuals who are living with mental illness discuss their challenges and their progress in overcoming those challenges. Another course we offer is Basics, a 6-week course for families with a child or an adolescent who has experienced mental illness. We also have a monthly support group for families on the third Thursday of every month. Please call NAMI Hunterdon at 908-284-0500